Dakota has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
Your future lay out there in the bullpen.
This is the bullpen.
Squad, bullpen, now.
Who let those guys up here?
Well, well, well. How the turntables.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here are the producers of ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Go ahead, call the producers.
Welcome into the bullpen. I am Del Olaleye. No Joe, he's on vacation in Chicago. He didn't tell me why this time, so I can't spend like 5 minutes talking about why he shouldn't be missing work for a party. He's actually on vacation, so he's in Chicago. So.
Can I let the cat out the bag what he's also doing?
That's up to him. I don't know. I guess so.
I don't know if I'm supposed to say this.
I guess it all depends on what he's doing and what Joe thinks should be out there about him.
But he's also, to my knowledge, if I recall, he's going to a wedding where he plans on, let's just say, having a really good time and not remembering.
Well, a wedding is fine. I mean, I guess. You're still missing work. But it's a Saturday show, so I get it, I guess. He took vacation time, so who am I to criticize him? Well, I'm the person who would criticize him because he's affecting me directly. But Joe is not in, and it's one of many changes. I can't talk about some of them just because that's how radio works. Everything has to be a surprise. But the one that I guess I can talk about is that this is the last time I'm going to be here on a Saturday, at least for the foreseeable future, because of football season approaching and schedules changing. The bullpen will still be here from 12 to 2 on Saturdays. It'll just feature Sean Mapes and Andrew Carlson, from what I understand, and Josh will be here as well. But I won't be here. Joe and I won't be here. I think we're going to have something for you on Sundays going forward. But for me, 4 shows, I guess, and I'm out for Saturday. We'll see what happens on Sunday. But just to keep some of you informed about what's going on here, as I can't tell you about some other things that are going on here. The show you just heard was the John Clay Wolf show. And I talked to Josh, obviously, off air about that show. And I told him I had a story because people who know my story here knew that at points in time, particularly in the more recent history, I was not working here full time. You would hear me pop in from time to time doing fill-in work with John or Lance, depending on which one of them was out. And then, you know, when I got back here in July, I filled in for Paul. But there was a time where I could have been the John Clay Wolf producer. It never got really serious, but it would have obviously involved me moving to Dallas or whatever. And John, it's been on a long time. You hear the promos. You hear John Granato talk about how long John Clay Wolf has been on the air at L97.5. So, John, we didn't really know each other very well. Clay Wolf, I mean, I don't really know John that well either. I do that purposely. But as far as John Clay Wolf is concerned, I've only called him a couple times to get him on the air when he would do lives with John. So we had a couple email conversations back and forth about possibly doing that show or helping him produce that show. And he asked me, I guess he was feeling like the show was missing something. So he asked me my booking experience. I thought I've done it before. I mean, it's not a strength of mine. But I certainly can get you guests. And then he says, I don't know if he meant it as a test specifically because I was not employed by him. But he goes, try to get Smashing Pumpkins for me. Yeah, Josh, those Smashing Pumpkins. Yeah. The Smashing Pumpkins, notably, who don't do interviews, who Billy Corgan likes to talk a lot, so he's out there. But the Smashing Pumpkins is because John does a show, obviously, you know, on Saturdays. He's on a lot of rock stations. So he said, yeah, I have a connection there. Try to get me the Smashing Pumpkins. I was like, okay. So I started to dig around and see if they even did interviews. They don't, really. I mean, Billy Corgan will do some a couple times. But it's generally with people he really knows and likes. Or like Howard Stern, like a big time show like that. Now John's done really well for himself, but I thought to myself, you know what, I'm gonna actually look into this and see what there is. And obviously there was nothing. There was no path. There was nothing. That and Billy Corgan has his own, like, they and most, you know, celebrities, they go on Instagram, they do their own stuff. They want to put out something, they'll just do it themselves or go do interviews at this point with a friend. So I thought to myself, huh, the Smashing Pumpkins, all right, And the conversation kind of ended there because I responded, hey, I tried. There's nothing really there. And that was the end of that. So, yes, Josh, no matter what a host demands of you as far as trying to book a guest, it could always be worse. It could always be the Smashing Pumpkins. Tough to get. Don't need anyone to put out their message. Hey, all they got to do is send out a tweet or an Instagram video or just an Instagram post. We're going on tour. Everyone's going. They don't really need promotion, but that's what I was asked to do to prove myself. And as you can tell, I'm here instead of in Dallas. So we know how that went. So that was I told Josh I would tell him a story, and I tell on air Saturday. Who knows?
It did not disappoint.
Yeah. Woo. I saw that name come across. I was like, okay, this isn't going to end well for me. And it ended well as far as being here, but as far as working with John Clay Wolf, it did not. So John Clay Wolf, he airs every morning before the bullpen, and he'll continue to do that. Just the bullpen will be different going forward. I don't want to do that whole thing. Or speaking of the bullpen, let's go to the Astros. But the Astros did lose last night to the Seattle Mariners, 2-0. The score in that one, a game where they didn't really hit the baseball at all. I mean, outside of Yonner Diaz, I think Altuve was credited with a single in the bottom of the ninth on the dribbler that he beat out. But other than Yiner, the Astros did nothing. I mean, Yiner, if he could have elevated a ball, he might have been able to tie the game in the fourth inning, but it was simply a double, and John Singleton struck out. John Singleton is a guy who Joe and I talked about last week as far as, well, maybe the Astros have found their answer at first base with Jose Abreu being out, and he hit those two home runs on Friday. It was supposed to be JV's day returning to pitch in Houston. It turned into John Singleton day, and I think since our conversation, he's had one hit. Now, he's been on base. He's walked, which is great, but I think he's had one single hit since we've had that conversation. So as of now, a weekend, not really the answer at first base. The Astros apparently have a giant hole there until proven otherwise. Maybe Yiner gets more at bats if it comes to that because Maldonado will be catching. But right now, giant hole at first base. And I only bring up Singleton because Yiner Diaz was the only one getting hits. Singleton had a couple opportunities to drive in runs, just did not come to fruition. But he was like all the other Astros who did nothing last night. Thankfully for them, the Brewers beat the Rangers in a game where the Brewers were up 9-4 in the bottom of the ninth. I thought to myself, okay, it's not going well for the Astros here in Houston, not hitting the baseball. That's fine. They're not going to lose any ground on the Rangers. And I look up and it's like 9-8 with the tying run at the plate. I'm like, oh, okay. That would be the worst possible scenario. You lose at home to Seattle, let them gain some ground on you, and then the Rangers have a comeback victory, scoring what would have been, I guess, 5 runs in the bottom of the ninth to tie it. That did not happen, thankfully. The Brewers held on the win. So the Astros remain 2.5 games up on the Rangers. And this is a series where the Astros can put the Mariners away, or the Mariners can become a team that's going to haunt the Astros down the stretch. The hope is that the Astros do what they've done recently. They lose, they win, they take 2 out of 3. They've won these series, and there's always one game where it looks like they have no idea how to hit a baseball. They don't lose games, at least in the recent run, like losing a game like 7-6. It's generally them being shut down completely and then exploding in the other two. So we hope to have that scenario tonight, because I'm not very concerned with the Mariners. It's just some innate thing in me, or maybe it's been built up by what the Astros have done since really 2015 when they made that surprise run and made the playoffs, that they're going to find a way. And right now, up 3.5 on the Mariners, 2.5 back of the Rangers. I can't foresee a scenario where they don't make the playoffs. I can't think of it. I know it was talked about quite a bit during the week, particularly on the show I work for or work on, The Bench, about what this series might mean. I can't see it. There's no way I can imagine the Mariners catching them and the Astros falling out of the playoff picture. It would be a shock. It would certainly mean the end of Dusty Baker, just because of all the things that have surrounded his tenure, particularly this year in his lineup decisions. Even if it wasn't his fault, you don't make the playoffs. You're an older gentleman. You've won your World Series. There's always been this talk about when the end is for Dusty, because the hiring initially was about, I guess, getting some goodwill with the rest of baseball because of what had and being the shield in front of his players as they had to deal with the cheating scandal. And now we're three seasons removed. Actually, we're in season four, 2021, 2022. We're in the fourth season of that, 2 World Series appearances, 1 title. And now it's about why do you keep putting Maldonado out there to hit when you have Yiner Diaz. And there are other lineup questions, but that's where we are with the Astros. Are the manager and his lineup decisions, because there's not a lot else to complain about because of how good they've been. Their injuries, the pitching hasn't been great. Urquidy was back. He looked good again in relief. That might be where he makes his way in the postseason. It's a place where I can't imagine the Astros not being, if I haven't said it enough. So he might be a guy who comes in, and is he your setup guy? He looked good in the latter half of that ball game. Is it Kendall Graveman? I guess those two might be battling out, but Urquidy is a chess piece Dusty will have, it appears, and the velocity was up. He looked good throwing the baseball last night. It's not like the Mariners had a great outing. I mean, their bats were pretty silent outside of two swings. Well, I say two swings. Julio Rodriguez apparently will never not have a good ball game the rest of his career. He made a slight adjustment like a week and a half ago, and now all of a sudden he can't be gotten out. Like, he tied the Mariners record for 9 straight plate appearances with a hit, and he also provided the winning margin. Sure, the Mariners had a home run to make it 2-0, but this, they didn't need it. They had Julio Rodriguez early in the third inning with the leadoff home run.
It's in a 4-game series of Mariners history. Look at this. Way back, way gone. Julio Rodriguez, home run number 21. He's 2-for-2 already today. Mariners have a 1-0 lead here in Houston.
He is a menace. Josh, did you play college football video games at any point?
Like, way back in the day, yeah. On like PS2.
Yeah, do you remember Game Breaker? Or did you play EA? Did you play the EA Sports?
I played
one?
EA Sports.
I've played both. I played a lot of college football, but I didn't really have a PlayStation. After the PS, did I get a PS2? I don't think so. I didn't have a PlayStation after the PS1. I switched to Xbox I don't play video games anymore. But Game Breaker was a game my cousins loved, and unlike Madden today, which I believe they have all these things where he has a rocket arm, all the attributes Madden might have today, and you have to set him off by doing something like an accomplishment. Game Breaker, yeah, like a couple players per roster who were considered game breakers. They have like a star as opposed to a circle that denotes them, and these were like a Reggie Bush type. These are the types, if you gave them the ball, they're gonna do something dramatic and either ruin you or help you, depending on if you had them or not. Julio Rodriguez the last 2 weeks has been that for the Mariners. They've been hot. He's been even hotter. As I said, he tied the franchise record for 9 straight hits, and I think he was too short of the major league record, which is 11, or is it 12? I think it's 11. But he did not get there because the Astros finally got him out. But he's been a force for the last couple weeks now. Slow start for him, but now he's kind of gotten back into what he was last year, and he was the best player on the field last night. He's been the best player on the field for really every time he steps on the field the last 2.5 weeks. And it was just because he made a slight adjustment to his batting stance and the way he swings the bat. And all of a sudden he can't be gotten out. And the Astros felt him last night as well. But even with that said, score some runs. He only gave up 2. The JP France, who had a couple issues, worked himself out of it. He only gave up 2 runs, and he still couldn't find a way to get a couple across to beat the Mariners. So now they gain some ground, but you don't lose any ground on the Rangers. I talked about John Singleton. He's replacing Jose Abreu because of an injury. Our long local baseball nightmare that is Jose Abreu has gone national. There's a story about him, and it's not a great list. This is the time in baseball where we stop talking about it's a marathon, not a sprint. We've had enough games to make final decisions on players, at least for a season. Jose Abreu makes a list that's not great. We'll talk about that on the other side. I am Del Olaleye. You can find me at DelV2 on Twitter. Josh is the producer. You can find him. I am Jay Chevy on Twitter. If you want to call in, RNP listener line is 713-780-3776, 713-780-3776. Just getting started. More Astros to discuss. We actually have an afternoon Texans game we'll discuss. It's funny. The Texans are playing the Dolphins. You have 2 Dolphin fans doing the show. Josh has his Tyreek Hill shirt on, so we'll talk about that. Whether we'll see Tyreek Hill, whether we'll see Tua, we don't know. The Dolphins are kind of cagey with that. And more importantly, who do the Texans get to face as they try to continue to improve? Well, more importantly to you guys, to be fair, if I'm going to be honest, I want to see if Tua and Tyreek will play. But for you, people generally listening out there, will the Texans see frontline Dolphin starters, particularly on that defensive line? Will Chubb? Will Jalen Phillips play? Will we get to see Laremy Tunsil? D'Amico said during the week that the starters all my guys will play. How long will a phantom injury come up to hold a guy out? We'll see. But we got a lot to discuss here on the bullpen. Dell by himself. Well, Josh is here, but no Joe. He's in Chicago at a wedding. So we'll talk more about that on the other side. We'll be back.
ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Dude,
I'd be most worried about seeing my seminal vesicles.
Or like the Florida State seminal vesicles?
This is The Bullpen, live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios. Here are the producers of ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Welcome back to The Bullpen. Dell here with Josh. No Joe. He is on vacation. So we'll hear from Joe, I guess, midweek or so. I'm not even sure how long he's out. But he'll be back to produce the Killer Bees at some point, I think, mid next week, or I don't think it'll be Monday. I don't pay that much attention to vacation notices. I just know when he's not here and if it affects me, and it affects me right now. But Joe George will be back at some point, and I just don't know the day. A couple of things to get to before with the Astros game last night before I talk about the Jose Abreu story and the list he's on that ain't great. The Astros and the Mariners going into last night had the two lowest bullpen ERA since July 28th. So not touching up those two team starters is apparently a path to defeat, because you're not going to get anything off the bullpen. We saw the not that the Astros got anything off the Seattle starter, but we saw they had no chance throughout that ball game, and to continue with the bullpen. So that it makes sense with the Mariners. They got a hot bat in Rodriguez, and their bullpen's been really, really solid. So it makes sense, all those things to come together to make sense and tell you why they've been really good the last two plus weeks going into three. And the Astros have to contend with that tonight. It's a team that has not worried most of us just because they've been in the rear view, and we're always looking forward, looking if we can catch the Rangers, looking if we can catch the Orioles. Now you have to worry about them because they take the first game of the series, and if they take two out of three, it's not that big of a deal. Now if they sweep you, it becomes a thing where the objects in the mirror are closer than they appear. But if you happen to lose a series to the Mariners, you can recover. It just means that your job down the stretch gets harder, and you just hope that's not the case. J.P. France, as I mentioned, got into a little bit of trouble, with scattered seven hits over six innings, two earned runs, avoided a big inning after the Astros, you know, stopped playing good defensive baseball, put him in a bit of a pickle, but he found his way out of it. Only walked one, which was good for him. But the Astros bats could not touch the Mariners throughout. It was tough watching the game, thinking, okay, Bryce Miller, he's an okay pitcher, but he's given the Astros trouble for, and he did it again. Maybe he's just one of those guys for the Astros. And then the bullpen closed it out after Bryce Miller went six and a third innings of really good baseball. He only struck out two, but 82 pitches in six and a third, efficient outing for him, and then Topa and Munoz closed it out. So the Astros go down 2-0, lose that game 2-0, and then lose a game on the Seattle Mariners going forward. Graveman and Urquidy, three innings of scoreless baseball. So Graveman, who's been off and on, his first couple outings, he gave up runs. He's kind of bounced back recently. And Urquidy, who may solidify himself in that bullpen, we don't foresee him being a starter. We never know if Dusty, but I don't foresee him being a starter down the stretch, or particularly when it comes to the playoffs. If he can prove that bringing him in with a clean inning and he can do what he did last night, it's just another death piece to that Astros bullpen, who's been really good, as I mentioned, since July 28th. But the story that, I mean, it's not a surprise, but the story that I've alluded to and before we went to break and right when we came back from it is the most disappointing players in baseball by division. This is a story from CBS Sports by RJ Anderson. And as you might imagine, Jose Abreu is on the list. He is the most disappointing player in the AL West. And we've talked about him nonstop, it feels like, since he was acquired. it didn't seem like a very Astros move to do. The Jeff Bagwell component of it certainly played a part in the discussion, but we're now so many games deep. It's mid-August. I guess we can finally come to a conclusion, at least the rest of baseball can. I think Astro fans had already made their mind up about Jose Abreu. He's been a good player in his history. That's why Bagwell went and signed him. I guess that's why Jim Crane signed off on it. But the numbers have been atrocious compared to what he's being paid. The slash numbers, 234, 291, 343. And I don't really know what OPS Plus is, but it's not good for him. Certainly way below his standard before he became an Astro and with the 10 home runs. And that's why the thought of John Singleton being a guy who could provide some power and maybe more consistent power was such an intriguing thing last Friday night. And then John Singleton has been worse than Jose Abreu since. So the Astros have a hole at first base. We don't know how they'll answer it, but he is one of the most disappointing players in baseball, Jose Abreu. Some other guys on the list are Tim Anderson, known for getting his chin checked and getting knocked out. Well, knocked down. He wasn't knocked out. He was a little woozy. He wasn't knocked out, but he was knocked down.
Man, that man was concussed. Stop it.
I mean,
stop it.
Knocked out makes me think we gotta get people in there to wheel him out. I know boxers get knocked out and get up, and the term is knocked out. He was knocked down. He was woozy. He got up. He needed help.
He got up and he was leaning. Yeah, That's what he was doing.
It's true. I was trying to give him a little bit of credit, mostly because it was a blind punch that got him. I don't want to give so much credit to, was it Alvarez, when you didn't even look at him when you hit him. It counts all the same because Tim Anderson's going to catch all the slander. Everyone's going to make fun of him. But I don't want to give the other combatant too much credit because we know that's a lucky punch, but Tim Anderson's a lightning rod. Everyone wants to make fun of him, mostly because he's the one who dropped the glove first. He wanted to fight first, and then a blind punch knocked him down. But
did Tim Anderson not just see the other day that he had a written statement apologizing to the team and like the fans for, I guess, that incident?
I know he should have apologized for his tweets because he, like most of us, you want to get loud. Once people are coming after you, and you know when you are so public and wanting to fight someone and it ends the way it does, your only recourse is to get on Twitter and start being flagrant with your words. I thought he would have apologized for that because that was a more embarrassing thing as far as his actions. You get in a fight, you get knocked down, okay, it's part of the risk. But then he had to run to Twitter and type a lot of things that didn't make a lot of sense because he was embarrassed. So apologizing probably was in the cards, and he's the guy who has been disappointing, as the website, as CBS Sports and the article will tell you. So I think it's best for him to fall back a little bit, apologize, be quiet, because a .238 batting average with one home run and 21 RBIs, and great. In a season that's been disappointing, I think getting knocked down, as you say, Josh, knocked out, for all the world to see, it's just a cherry on top of what's been a crappy, crappy year for Tim Anderson, at least on the field.
And then you got to apologize for that on top of it? That's a terrible season. That's terrible.
Look, some of us, at least if that happened to me,
I'm not apologizing.
Well, first off, I'm not running to Twitter.
That's number one.
I'm not really a social media person as far as reading things and responding to everything, but if I'm of that mindset where I like to be on social media, I like to talk to people or respond to people. If I get knocked down slash knocked out, you're not going to hear from me. I'm not going to be so obvious about it and, you know, deactivate my account, but you're not hearing from me for a while because there's nothing I can say that's going to smooth over what happened to me in front of everyone. That's one of those things where you're like, you know what? Accept it, roll with it, and kind of pretend like it didn't happen. Although you can't, because everyone's going to remind you of it, you just hope to let it go. You don't exacerbate the situation by running to Twitter and saying things that you have to apologize for later. So Tim Anderson, as Josh said, he's had a horrible time. He apologizes and takes responsibility for his Ramirez fight. Well, you did start it first with the inappropriate hard tag. You broke a baseball rule. You don't do that. And then when you drop the gloves first, at least if you're going to do all that, we all know you're going to drop the gloves first. Or the glove first, you win the fight. Because at least if you win the fight, that's always what you can fall back on. You can apologize, but in your heart of hearts, you know, hey, I won that fight. So he took responsibility, as Josh said, all everywhere. You can find it. Tim Anderson apologizing for his role in the Jose Ramirez incident. I don't even blame him for that. I blame him for the tweets afterwards. That's what he should apologize for, but he didn't. A couple other guys on the list, Alek Manoah for the Blue Jays, not having a great year. Honorable mention in the AL West as far as most disappointing players, according to CBS Sports, behind Jose Abreu is Anthony Rendon and lefty starters. So a couple of angels, Anthony Rendon and Tyler Anderson, guys who got money and who haven't performed, which is par for the course for the Angels. Shohei Ohtani has performed. He's going to go get his money, and it appears from someplace else. And Mike Trout always injured. So the Angels have a problem paying guys and them showing up and playing. Trey Turner in the Phillies is in the NL East. But that kind of wraps up what really the discussion. It's really I really only want to talk about Jose Abreu, mostly because baseball has become – it's not a regional thing, but do we care about other teams? Like, I don't watch Sunday Night Baseball. And that's maybe partly because I'm not a big baseball fan. But when the Astros aren't playing, and if I'm not keeping track of what the Rangers or the Mariners are doing, I'm not watching a lot of baseball. So what Alek Manoah is doing in Toronto, whatever. When they come to town, I'll care. If the Astros see them in a series that matters, I'll care. But it's really Astros and Astros only when it comes to baseball and my interest. And Jose Abreu tops the list, at least for us, as far as most disappointing players in 2023. Not a great signing for Jeff Bagwell. Probably knew it when it happened, but it's been confirmed. And, well, great for the Astros that there's two more years of this. And we'll see how if Jose Abreu can come back healthy and bounce back. And maybe there's a redemption story for him going forward. I think I'm exhausted talking about baseball. I did it for it's not a full 30 minutes because there's a break, but it feels like an hour. So we'll move on. We'll discuss the Texans. They have a game in the middle of the afternoon, probably because they didn't want to compete against the Astros, so which makes sense for them. Preseason game at home against the Dolphins. We'll discuss what happened during practices this week and does it translate to games and who the Texans might actually face. Will they see any frontline Dolphins? Because the Dolphins have a history, particularly under Mike McDaniel, of not playing their guys a lot in the preseason. He's like the opposite of John Harbaugh. John Harbaugh cares a lot about the preseason. Not like he's running guys out there for three quarters, but the winning those games matters. The streak is in the 20s now, consecutive games they've won.
Trust.
Yeah. So we'll see going forward if Mike McDaniel puts any care into this game coming up, or did he think his team got all the work they needed in the week that was. So we'll discuss the Texans, what we want to see or what we don't want to see when we come back.
ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Sweet Sassy Molassy.
John Stockton says, hey, look at me. I'm a little teapot. I'll run right up your dress. But then Karl Malone says, Sweet Sassy Molassy, you are going to pay a lot.
Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's The Bullpen, ESPN, 97.5 and 92.5.
Welcome back to The Bullpen. I am Del Olaleye here. And Josh is playing, he's playing a Will Smith song that you may recognize. He's wearing his Tyreek Hill shirt. I am a known Dolphin fan. The Dolphins are in town to face the Texans. They've had a couple joint practices this week. They'll play in a couple hours now. I guess 2.5 hours here. As the Texans wrap up another week of preseason football, and we'll see how much CJ Stroud plays, if he sees the best Dolphin players or if he sees backups. That'll be determined. I don't think the news is even out about how many Dolphins. But what they generally do is their official account will tell you who won't be dressed. They don't really make announcements from the players. We'll get to from the coaches, particularly Mike McDaniel doesn't make those announcements. We'll get to D'Amico Ryans and his announcement about who would play a little bit earlier. He made that comment a little bit earlier in the week. We'll play that a little bit later in the segment. It's a different vibe for me today. Forget about the whole Joe not being here thing. I came in last week, had a Fulham jersey on. I only think about this now because there's a promo for Glenn Davis and Soccer Matters. By the way, the Women's World Cup final, early morning tomorrow, I think it's at 5 a.m. The semifinal was earlier this morning, and Australia lost to Sweden 2-0. So Australia finishes in fourth place in their home country slash continent. As a good run for them, but they go down to Sweden in the third place game. But I came here feeling good, taunting Lance, because my Fulham team beat his Everton team in a game Fulham shouldn't have won. A little different feel this week. Tim Ream, the American international, gets sent off with his second yellow, so he gets a red card, so he's out of the game, and then Fulham goes on to lose 3-0, being down a man. And then their best striker gets sold to Saudi Arabia, a deal that has been coming for what felt like a month now. That deal finally gets finalized, so the Saudi Arabian influence in men's soccer continues as they overpay. Alexander Mitrovic's a good player. He's not worth what they're going to pay him as far as his wages, and I think Fulham's going to get anywhere from like $45 to $50 million as far as a transfer fee. So they lose their best player out the door, who kept them up in the Premier League last year. But it's really about Saudi Arabia and their money. They'll throw it around anyone. He's in his prime, I guess, in his late 20s. Soccer, I feel like soccer's a little bit different unless you're like a superstar. I feel like your prime is your early to mid-20s, and then once you get into 28, 29, you're probably declining. You're probably not able to play at a high level in the major leagues unless you're one of the greats. But he moves on to Saudi Arabia. He's one of many. We know Neymar's over there now. Ronaldo was the first of the major names. So that will continue, and we'll see how America deals with the Saudis as far as their influence and whether American sports leagues will allow them in. So far, there's been some resistance as far as the team sports. We know golf and their issues with LIV. So another really good player from a big league goes over to the Saudis to play in their league. So we'll see how long that continues. But that's just the vibe. My team loses and they lose their best player all in a matter of hours. Great.
I think the NBA might – I could have sworn I read – could be a fake headline. Could be fake news, but I'm pretty sure the NBA and Adam Silver was saying something along the lines like, oh, yeah, no, there's going to be some sort of deal or influence from, like, Saudi with the NBA going forward, or they're in the discussions of it. So I'd like to see what that's going to mean.
Yeah, because we know about the history and the recent history of how they treat journalists and, well – maybe even just human rights overall. So money trumps all. We know that to be the case. I guess it'll be about how much money will it take for the Saudis to either, I guess, wash some of their – and I say the Saudis generally because there are multiple factions as far as people who want to invest. It's not just one group. But we'll see if there's enough money to make the NBA or the NFL or Major League Baseball not care about what people might say about allowing – let's say, a potentially unscrupulous group of people. Although, really, how many owners are scrupulous? I mean, the Saudis may take it to another level, but I'm not sure anyone who makes that type of money has the best business practices.
Is it the pot calling the kettle black?
Yeah. It might be very hypocritical if we go through the history of all these owners and how they make their money. I guess they would just combat it with, well, we're not killing journalists. So that would be the difference. Hey, we may not be great, but we're not killing journalists when they disagree with us. So that would be the way they tell everyone, hey, we're not as bad as them. So we'll see. It's just one more player in European soccer. We'll see if it becomes a thing in American pro sports. And I don't envision like a player going over there because like there's no American Football League. It would have to be something where a Saudi-backed team in Euro basketball says, hey, I'm going to pay. I'm trying to think of the equivalent. James Harden would be the equivalent. We'll get to him a little bit later. He's a guy who is in a situation where he didn't get the money he wanted. Let's say a Saudi-backed team in Euro basketball goes, James, we'll give you $45 million a year over 3 years to come play here. Would he do it? I feel like he would be one. I think he feel like he would be a standard bearer. I feel like he'd be like, yeah, I'll do it. At 33, 34 years old, we think he won't get another big deal. Does he care that much about winning a championship in the NBA or securing another bag? I think if we're nominating guys potentially who would be the first to go over there, go to Europe and play because some team with a lot of money is going to throw it at him. I don't even know their salary cap rules. They probably have one, so it would probably make it impossible. But if it became a thing where they could circumvent the rules, like kind of how Inter Miami is doing to make Messi and Jordi Alba and Busquets happen, I feel like James would be the first. We'll see. We'll talk about James Harden and the messiness that is Philadelphia he, Daryl Morey, and the Philadelphia 76ers a little bit later. But I did want to get to this D'Amico Ryans bite. I guess we'll talk more football on the other side so we're not late to this break. But D'Amico Ryans earlier in the week was asked about who he would play, how many guys would play, and how much they would play. Here's his answer.
With our game this week, we'll play all our players will play. All our players will see time in the game, and that's how we'll go about it. CJ will go out first, again, as he did last week, and you know, we'll judge the game as it goes along.
So, at least if you're a Texans fan, you'll see your best players as long as they're healthy. We know Tytus Howard won't play because of his injury. I don't know if any phantom Laremy Tunsil injury, so that would, according to D'Amico, that means your starting left tackle will play. So you'll be able to move George Fant to right tackle. You don't have to see Austin Deculus, at least with C.J. Stroud out there, because there are a couple – the top two quarterbacks have been getting punished early on. C.J. Stroud in his game against the Patriots, and Bryce Young has taken a couple big hits early on. He did in his first game and then yesterday. And the difference is Austin Deculus isn't a player we expect to be on the roster, at least if the Texans are healthy, with Tytus Howard and Charlie Hecht, those guys are healthy. I don't expect Austin Deculus to make the roster. Ike Ekwonu is a starting tackle, and he got beat a couple times, one by Kayvon Thibodeau last night, clean, and Bryce Young took a hit. They invested a lot in him. He's a top 10 pick. Your job is to keep your diminutive quarterback, rookie quarterback, upright. That's your job. I don't expect Deculus to do that. I expect Deculus at some point, if he even makes a practice squad, to be on the practice squad or be trying out for the XFL or USFL. That's not what the tackle in Carolina's prospective future is. You're supposed to be the guy in front of Bryce Young for the next decade. And so far, at least from the couple clips I've watched, he's been getting beat and Bryce Young is paying the price. So you hope with George Fant and Laremy Tunsil out there today, we don't see Bradley Chubb or Jalen Phillips touch C.J. Stroud if those two play. We're still up in the air about who the Dolphins will play. We'll talk more about the Texans and what we'd like to see for them on the other side. There's another game going on right now, Detroit and Jacksonville. I don't think Trevor Lawrence entered the game, so I don't know how much there is to discuss. To be honest, it's Detroit and Jacksonville. They're one of the two more anonymous franchises. Despite having really good years last year, I don't know how many people talk about those two teams other than now that Dan Campbell's there, there's some hype around Detroit. But as the last decade or so, probably two of the more anonymous franchises in all the NFL, maybe all sports as far as attention grabbers, unless something stupid is happening around them. But two teams, one team who made the playoffs and won a playoff game, the other hopes to duplicate that, what at least Detroit does. They hope to do what Jacksonville did, and Jacksonville hopes to take another step as they won their division and had one of the more miraculous comebacks in NFL history when they took out the Chargers on Wild Card Weekend. So we got a couple more things to discuss as far as the NFL is concerned and the Texans. Also, a hit to Jeremy Branham's chances of at least the Will Levis hype train takes another hit. Sorry, Jeremy. We'll talk about that on the other side as well.
ESPN 97.5 and 92.5, the best sports radio station in Houston.
I've got to prove that I'm the best, and I'm racing no matter what you tell me. Huh?
This is The Bullpen, live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios. Here are the producers of ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
With the rotation on the offensive line, we're moving a lot of guys around there. So most of it is like load management and rep counts. Like we want to get guys, you know, a certain amount of reps within a certain period. So that's the thought process behind why guys rotate at times, especially, you know, in practice when we can manage like the plays we have called. We may want, you know, we may want Kenyon to see one thing, we may want Dieter to see another play. So just a matter of getting the right look for those guys.
That was D'Amico Ryans earlier in the week in response to a question about the rotation at guard involving Michael Dieter and Kenyon Green. If you're a Texan fan, hell, if you just want C.J. Stroud to be okay, you better hope that that is true, that they're simply rotating because you just want to get guys different looks. Because if it's an actual battle between Dieter and Kenyon Green, it's a problem for Caserio for drafting Kenyon Green and a problem for C.J. Stroud because Michael Dieter is not good. As I mentioned, you have two Dolphin fans in the building. Michael Dieter was jettisoned as soon as Mike McDaniel got there because he didn't fit the offense they wanted to run. He was a Brian Flores draft pick with Chris Greer as GM. And the Mike McDaniel-Bobby Slowick system are similar as far as what they want their offensive lineman to do. Now, there were discussions throughout the week about how they differ because of the connection. And the talk was Miami uses more motion. Certainly, they have more speed. They like to use some more eye candy as far as surrounding the offensive line. But as far as what they want their offensive lineman to do, they kind of want to run the football similarly. And if Michael Dieter couldn't cut it in Miami, you don't want him being your starting guard here in Houston. So the hope is that is true and that they're just giving these guys looks and it's not a real battle. And Kenyon Green, who's recovering from an off-season procedure, will be a guy who solidifies that spot. Dieter is at best probably a backup center. He is not a guy you want starting for you, not on a good offensive line. You already have the Titus Howard injury. You hope that all the investment, whether it be money or picks in that offensive line, comes to fruition. And that doesn't start with Kenyon Green, but he's a big part of it. With Juice Scruggs and Kenyon Green and Laremy Tunsil and Titus Howard, you hope that's a foundation for years to come for your offensive line. Michael Dieter's not a foundation unless you're building your house on sand. I'm just saying. I watched him play quite a bit. Miami tried him in multiple spots. It didn't work out in any of them. You just hope he's a depth piece, not a guy who's actually going to take that position from Kenyon Green. So that's one of the bigger quotes that struck me only because of my not personal experience, but just having watched Dieter over the last 3 or 4 years. Not a guy you want starting for you. Not if you want a good offensive line. So you hope Kenyon Green takes that job. Some other things we'd probably want to see more from Tank Dell. I don't know who he'll see in that Miami secondary. Xavien Howard, who's got another legal issue potentially. He's a guy who gets sued, but those lawsuits get tossed out. They usually involve women. This one, if you haven't seen, he is being accused of filming and then not distributing, because that would imply he's selling them, but showing his sex tapes involving women. This particular woman, I guess.
But showing who, though?
This is the thing. That
what? It never said who.
I would see. The question is, are we talking like camera on a tripod where he's actually... this actually some production value, or is this a video of him with his camera on his phone and he saved it? And is the accusation that he's sending this video to his buddies? I don't know. Well, I get his lawyer has responded, calling him baseless. They're going to try to have it dismissed on Monday. So the first date that courts can be open, they want to have it dismissed. We'll see. Like I said, Xavien Howard's been sued before. Some of it, I guess all of it's really involved women, from potential domestic violence stuff, but they've all those lawsuits have been dismissed and he's never been charged with anything. I think there was even a gun incident, not that he shot a gun, but there was an incident involving a shooting and he was in the area. It didn't fall on him. So he's had his issues in Miami, but nothing has stuck. He's a Houston guy too. I don't want to call him Teflon Zave, but he's been a guy who nothing has stuck to him. Yeah. So I don't know what this is, but it was a story that broke on Friday. So he probably wasn't going to play anyway because he never really plays in the preseason. The Dolphins have had some issues in their secondary as far as injuries. We know about the Jalen Ramsey thing. A couple of their other guys who they would depend on have been nicked up. I don't know if they're going to play. We know Nico Collins had a really good day, at least in one-on-ones, against the likes of Noah Igbinoghene, who's been a relative disappointment, although the reports leading up to this weekend had been that he's been playing well. We know about Eli Apple, his back and forth with Tyreek Hill over the years. He's there. Apparently, Nico Collins had burned him for a long touchdown with no safety help in Wednesday's practice. So you may see Tank Dell and those Texans receivers against the third, fourth, fifth corners from Miami. So they may have good days. So if that's the case, you'd like to see Tank Dell play well and Nico Collins play well. And Dalton Schultz, who had a good day, I believe, on Wednesday. You want to see the connection with CJ Stroud continue to grow, because those are the guys we expect him to depend on. We'll see what we get from Robert Woods and what John Metchie can be as he recovers from not only an injury he suffered at the end of his college career, but obviously overcoming cancer as well. So a couple things to focus in on as that game gets closer. Teddy Bridgewater's playing for the Lions right now. I figured out who has played so far. No Trevor Lawrence, no Jared Goff. The Lions are getting a good taste of the Teddy Bridgewater experience. the thought of Teddy Bridgewater is better than actually having Teddy Bridgewater on your roster. You know it, Josh. You saw what happened last year. You know, oh, Teddy Bridgewater's backing up to it. That's great. Teddy Bridgewater couldn't survive one play against the Jets in his first start because of, let's say, a questionable concussion thing where they allegedly saw his head hit the ground and maybe him shake his head, so they took him out. So we had to deal with Skylar Thompson, and then he throws a pick six against the Patriots late in the year, hurts his hand on the play, and isn't available the rest of the year. So like I said, and in this game, Teddy Bridgewater, the Lions are moving the football a little bit, like a botched snap, I believe it was, or maybe even trying to hand the ball off to the running back. All I saw was a Jacksonville Jaguar recovering the football and running back in the opposite direction. And that's been the vibe from Teddy. And you know Teddy ain't very serious about football when he puts the number 50 on. You know, look, I didn't read into the story about why he did it, but a quarterback who throws a number 50 on, unless you're like Brennan Armstrong at Virginia, I think he like did that one year. Putting 50 on means you're not that serious as a quarterback. That's all I'm going to – unless – look, I'll retract if there's some big story surrounding it and why he did it, but I see a quarterback with the number 50 on. It's a guy going, you know what, I'm just out here. The Lions want to pay me to be a backup? Great. The Lions better hope. Now, the obvious hope is never have your starting quarterback get hurt. But Jared Goff better remain on the field, because I dealt with Teddy Bridgewater watching him play last year. You even had like Miami Heat players asking Dolphin players when they would talk to each other about why doesn't Teddy want to play? Because I believe he missed time with a hand injury. Is there a story behind it why he's putting on the number 50?
His favorite number is 5, and he thought to himself, why not just add okay. Zero.
See,
at the end.
This is an unserious person.
It is so unserious.
He does not care.
This is according to Yahoo Sports.
So Teddy Bridgewater is doing that thing where all sports radio people talk about, where they go, the greatest job in the world is a backup quarterback. You never have to play. You get paid a pretty good salary. You just hold a clipboard. Teddy Bridgewater is all in on that philosophy. He's got to play in this preseason because they're not going to risk Jared Goff. But at times in Miami last year, it felt like he didn't want to play despite going into the season, because there's so much uncertainty about Tua Tagovailoa. People are thinking, well, Teddy Bridgewater won that job. He's probably already a better quarterback. And Teddy was like, no, I came here to play, or actually not play. I came here to chill in my hometown and get paid and hope that Tua never misses a snap. And it certainly felt like that at times, but the Teddy Bridgewater experience, much better thought than actually experiencing it, and the Lions fans got a taste of it and are getting a taste of it in this game so far.
He played to me like, you know, the one kid that like rides a bench, doesn't matter what the sport is,
yeah.
And like the coach was like, all right, come, your time,
yeah.
Sub in, and he like they're surprised and like completely unaware. I'm like shocked and nervous. That's yeah. How I would describe how he played.
Yeah. So he entered a couple games. We know Tua had his concussion against the Bengals. He entered that one. Didn't play particularly well. He threw a pick in a game. On a drive that could have led to a Dolphins win. I mentioned the pick six that changed the Patriots game around, and then he also played one snap in the Jets game early on in the year after the Tua concussion against the Bengals, and Skylar Thompson played the rest of the way. So, and then I feel like Teddy Bridgewater, as Logan Roy would say, you are an unserious person, Teddy. At least when it comes to football. Don't know what he is like outside of it, but I feel like this is a guy going, it's pretty good to be a backup quarterback, and I'm going to enjoy that until I can't enjoy it anymore. So that wraps up the first hour of the Bullpen. Del here with Josh. Once again, you can tweet at the show at DelV2 or at IMJChevy. That's Josh's Twitter. You can call the show 713-780-3776. We'll continue to talk more about the Astros. There's some more football stuff to discuss, and the messiness that is the Sixers, Harden, and Daryl Morey continues. We'll discuss that on the other side.
ESPN 97.5 on Twitch. We control the spice.
The worm is the spice. The spice is the worm.
At Ability Chiropractic, we do things differently. We believe lasting health starts with understanding how your body truly works, not masking pain with quick fixes. Our doctors take the time to educate and empower you to take control of your wellness journey. Through gentle, customized adjustments, we help restore proper function and unlock your body's natural healing power. That's why Columbus families have trusted Ability Chiropractic since 2012. See the difference for yourself. Book an appointment today at abilitychiro.com.
COTA has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Eastern and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
During the Right Rug Flooring Anniversary Sale, we're celebrating 91 years of the guaranteed lowest prices with beautiful carpet with a lifetime stain warranty starting at $219 a square foot installed with pad. And luxury vinyl starts at $399 a square foot installed. Unbeatable prices and 24-month special financing available with approved credit. Schedule a free in-home appointment with our flooring experts at riterug.com. Right Rug Flooring's Anniversary Sale.